I'll keep Beulah, vibrating songs of victory in my bones.
Listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org. Non-commercial and community-powered radio. Support for this program comes from KFAI listener members and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and made possible in part through grants from the state of Minnesota and listeners like you. Chi Miigwech. Bonjour, relatives across our great Turtle Island and beyond. This is Deanna Standing Cloud, your host for the next hour on Medicine Bundle, the show celebrating Indigenous people and our allies as we creatively embrace our gifts of healing and connection. What's in your medicine bundle?
I'm just at me and say it with your chest. Last time I saw you, you couldn't say less. You playing checkers, but I'm playing chess. Well, you act on my ex, got a lot to address. How am I pretending Resi when I'm booked on the red? How am I pretending and blood quantums in the red? Got a tribal ID if you wanna act like the feds. Supposed to be a gorilla to let me show you what that is.
Welcome to Medicine Bundle. It is Friday and it is, what day is it? June 6th. It's actually my daughter's birthday today. So she turns 26. Happy birthday to my firstborn, Brianna. Brianna Wabanisi Quay Green. Happy birthday, Bree. Here in the studio, I have a special guest and I'm super excited because I met this person. I can't even remember the day we met, which is, I think it's just like that. I don't even know how old we were. Babies? Toddlers? Our mothers were best friends, and they met at a Native early childhood class, and they were besties ever since. And Deanna, so she has the same name as me. We have the same name. Deanna and I have known each other ever since, and we are in our 40s now. So this is such a treat to have her. I'm gonna let her introduce herself, and I'm just excited. So, Deanna, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing good. My name is Deanna Bolio. I am enrolled member of White Earth Nation. Yeah, like Deanna said. Yeah, she and I have been friends since before I can remember. Her mom, Carmen, and my mom, Renee, were really, really, really close. And I have a lot of childhood memories, a lot of birthdays, Christmases, holidays, Halloweens especially, of memories of us just, you know, being together and doing things together. So I am really happy to be here. And I'm glad that she asked me to come on the show or come and speak.
Word. So, no, I remember also we would do, okay, this is so bad and this is going to age us. But we would do prank calls.
Oh, yeah, we did do that.
We'd have, like, sleepover slumber parties, and we would have the white pages. So yellow pages were for the businesses, and white pages were for individuals. And it was so bad. It was so bad. I do not recommend. So we can't get away with something like this right now. I don't know what the equivalent of this, maybe hacking or, like, catfishing or something.
When you dox somebody, like, that's, I feel like, would be, I mean, it's not to the level of, like, scariness that doxing somebody is.
What's doxing? I don't even know what that is.
It's like when you get someone's personal or information, like their address and phone number, and you like send cops to their house.
Gee,
it's really bad. I only know about it because I have a teenager, and she tells me a lot about what's happening in the world today. That like I'm like, I don't know, I can't be bothered to learn new things. But so I feel like that would be an equivalent these days, is that you just like go to a random page in the white pages and find a name and a phone number and call and leave, like, I feel like this is even before voicemails.
Yeah, totally.
So if they had an answering machine, you would leave some kind of prank call message if you were so inclined. Otherwise, you would just wait for somebody to answer the phone.
Hey, is your refrigerator running?
Right. Yeah, or like, you know, there's someone at your doors. I don't even remember what we would say.
I don't either.
Like, I'm trying even to think. I feel like we might have, like, blocked it out because I feel like that would, some of the things we would do, we would probably end up in jail for.
Yes, seriously. And I'm kind of embarrassed sharing it. It was so long ago, and it was kind of late at night as well.
Yeah.
So we would call people, oh God, probably 1 o'clock in the morning. I feel so bad. So we're healing here. We're healing
right.
on the show.
Right.
We're shedding.
Right. And it was also the 80s, and we didn't have anything else to do. It wasn't like how it is now where you have like unlimited YouTube videos to watch and you could veg. Like what was on TV was like, paid, or what are the paid advertisements
mm-hmm. where they like would sell stuff?
Yeah, infomercials.
Mm-hmm.
It was either watch infomercials or
in the middle of the night, yeah,
the 700 Club, mm-hmm. and like that was one of your options.
Yeah, you had so shows back in the day, you'd have to watch them at a certain time, and if you missed it, then you couldn't watch it again until it was time for the show to play.
Right.
Could you imagine?
No. I mean, even now, I can't imagine how we survived before binging. Like, before you could have a show at your fingertips. And, like, how crucial commercial breaks were.
Yeah, totally.
Where, like, you had 30 seconds to, like, get more food, get more drink, and then use the bathroom. And then you would be like, hurry up, it's on. You're going to miss it. And you, like, have to, like, high-speed run from the bathroom to the back to the living room so you, like, didn't miss any content. It was, like, pretty high stakes. I feel like maybe that's part of, like, why now as an adult I'm, like, everything is so permanent. Like, the worst thing that could happen now, like, is so devastating because, like, God forbid you lose 5 seconds of your favorite show that you'll never get to see again.
Really? I couldn't even imagine not being able to, like, rewind. I remember there was, is it TiVo?
Yeah.
Where you could actually rewind stuff, and that was very innovative. But, like, today, you can pause it, you can go have a meal, you can go downstairs, check the, do whatever, and then you can come back at your leisure. That's wild.
Yeah. Or even, like, streaming services, like, they save your place indefinitely. Yeah. Like, I can be like, oh, I know I started this show, and then go back, and it's like, oh, yeah, you were on episode two. And, like, right at the time where you stop watching it, you can just continue it.
Yeah.
It's like, that's a luxury I feel like not a lot of people appreciate, because it's always been a thing.
And they check on you. I mean, I don't think I had a more concerned friend than Netflix. Are you still there?
Are you still there?
Or, like, if you don't pay your subscription, they're, like, begging you to come back. Like, I remember I took a, like, maybe 6 months hiatus from Netflix, and they would email me the heck every, hello, we miss you so much. I'm like, oh, right. My God. Are right. they courting me right now?
Yeah.
Do you want to send me some Uber Eats, Netflix?
Right. And they're, like, sending you, like, teaser trailers of, like, what new content they have. It's, yeah. like, the Netflix equivalent of, like, of enticement. They're like, look at what we have coming up in our next.
That you won't get to
that
see.
That you won't see ever unless you give us all your money.
And here's $200 off of HelloFresh. We love you.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So you never have to leave the house. We'll just bring you food. And you can just watch Say Netflix less. Until the end of time.
So a hack is to stop paying Netflix for a little bit, and then until they get nervous, and then start demanding, like it's yeah. a hijack.
Right. I have all the power here.
You're nothing without me.
Without my viewership, you would be nothing.
Who are you even? You're nobody without me.
And I'm going to tell all my friends to stop watching.
Yep. I'm going to Hulu. Bye.
I have one show that's like my guilty pleasure. It's Married at First Sight. Mm-hmm. And it's like super gatekeeped by Lifetime Network.
Yeah. Lifetime does that.
Yeah. So the only way I can get access to it is if I have Xfinity cable or some kind of cable subscription. I was like, there's no way I'm doing that. So if anyone listening has a Xfinity login I can borrow, I would appreciate it.
Hit me up
on my socials.
I'm on D-Bully on all platforms.
Right.
Oh my God.
Right, or if you can't find me, just send it to Deanna. Yeah. She'll get it.
Send me too. I right. want to watch it. Never seen it. I never, well, and then that's almost like when you go to the movies like this. So my daughter told me about Sinners.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately, so my brain has been working crazy. I didn't even think that to go to theaters. So like, ooh, let me look it up. Man, I've been programmed. I've been conditioned. And she's like, no, Mom, they're in the theaters. I'm like, oh my God. So.
Right.
I really want to see that movie.
Yeah.
I'm not a movie goer anymore because the movie theater is right across from the street from me. So I'm like, I could just be going home. Because, I mean, the chairs aren't that cozy, you know, like I could be laying and I take my shoes off. But going to the movies back in the day was a big thing. It was mm-hmm. huge back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going to see Titanic on Christmas. And I wanted to be with my then boyfriend, and I was kind of mad. I was like, why is this movie so long? Doesn't the ship just like sink? Oh my God, why? I was like, it was
like,
so.
Don't we already know what happens?
I can predict what happens in this movie. I felt bad because my mom was taking me to a movie, and I wanted to not be there.
Right.
But it was good. It was totally good. I cried, I think, like yeah. everybody did.
Yeah. I think I was 16. 15, 16, when that movie came out. So, yeah, it was after Romeo and Juliet, and mm-hmm. I already had a full-fledged crush on Leo DiCaprio. Yes. He was everything to me in the 90s. And so I just remember, like, going to see Titanic and being like, this is, like, everything I could ever hope for. And like really set me up for some unrealistic expectations for the rest of my life.
Same. Me too. Like,
where I was like, I don't know if I would have anybody that would ever, you know, do the things that Jack did for Rose in that movie.
The part when they're in the, what is it called? When the, I don't know, the front of the ship. Man, wouldn't that be cool if you did it on a bike?
Yeah.
With one of the guys in the on the south side.
Hey. Oh, great. I feel like you would get, everybody would laugh at you if they seen you.
And then
you.
You'd bite like, it, and then.
Like, what the heck is Deanna doing with that weirdo guy?
God.
That...
Yeah. That's not even his bike.
Right. Is that somebody else's baby daddy? Like, what is she doing?
So, you, what is your, so, I mean, I know what your, I mean, it, community role or professional title is to me, but you've done some really dynamic work as far as like being in spaces where Native people aren't really represented. And mm-hmm. we've been chatting and hanging out all day, and it just, I myself, I have been in places where I'm like the only Native person, or mm-hmm. I'm representing Native people, and I really do it at like this novelty place, and I'm like, oh, you know, we do put out tobacco and this and that, and you know, everyone's like, oh, you know, and it's so that's kind of like the vibe the vibe that I give. But I really admire when Native women can be in spaces where they, you know, the envelope is, you know, like our message and about our community is uplifted. Mm-hmm. What, I don't know, I'm trying to form a question around this, but you're amazing, and I'm thankful to have, you know, you in my family. I consider you my family, but like in the community, what do you see your role as who you are? I mean, we're still developing, but
yeah. I've grown up in the community, like, you know, I can, like, all my memories are of, you know, everyone that was here from, you know, from, I don't know, like the 80s, but, you know, my dad is Charlie Stately. He owns the store in the Indian Center, so Woodland Indian Crafts. And like I feel like I've just always been there. Like the American Indian, the Minneapolis American Indian Center has just kind of been my second home, because I've always been there and like been around elders, been around other kids. You know, I remember like the Golden Eagles program, mm-hmm. and even like a lot of the Healthy Nations and other programs that have, you know, got the grant money and have come and gone, but also mm-hmm. like, you know, the people, they just kind of you kind of gravitate towards where the work should be. Mm-hmm. And I guess even thinking about my own you know, career and like things that the jobs that I've chosen to do for my community, it's kind of been under that, my motivation to like, I want to help people help themselves. So I started my work with doing outreach at the Native American Community Clinic. And that was just because it's like, I need a job. I need to take care of my kid. I'm kind of, you know, just need to make ends meet. And then, you know, falling in love with helping and being part of the service role for my community, and carving out a place for myself that I didn't really ever anticipate. And then that's kind of every job that I've had or role that I've had for community has kind of led me to the next place. So mm-hmm. I worked for the University of Minnesota Extension as a SNAPED educator, like doing, so that was where I learned how to build network and do networking and outreach, taking the work that I was doing with outreach and doing community engagement and building networks, and even learning about policy and how systems work with, like, you know, you have pieces of legislature that, and you have all these like different levels of government that impact how people access things like mm-hmm. food and basic needs and housing and things like that. And then seeing how the way that the system is set up, it really creates barriers where it should be creating access. Working in food sovereignty really showed me how food accessibility is a main feature of that work, is that like it's not so much a food production issue as like it is a food accessibility issue. The people who need the food the most aren't able to afford it or get it. And then we live in food deserts as well. Like a lot of our communities mm-hmm. are food deserts. And so if you don't have transportation, how are you able to get food on the table? So that was some of that work. And that drove more into me. The next step was community navigator for the Minneapolis Police Department. And that role really changed how I seen the world, because I was forced to have to address the trauma that I knew was there because I experienced it growing up in the streets of Minneapolis, and how Minneapolis Police Department and how the officers showed up in our community. But I was also a DARE kid in school. Like, I went to Anderson Open and Anderson School. And, you know, there was always a police officer at the school, and he was, like, so helpful and such a good officer friendly, you know, and he's in, and so I had, so the concept that I had for our officers, I had one version of officer mm-hmm. that I seen where the officer was a good guy in the school. But then I had the other side where we have officers that are patrolling our streets, and when they get out of their vehicles and they come and interact mm-hmm. with us, they're not good. And they cause more trauma and more damage to our communities than necessary, or than they hinder more than they help. Mm-hmm. And that was my experience. And when I was going through trainings with the police department, and we're doing procedural justice trainings, I had to personally address that trauma that I had stored, mm-hmm. because in my experience, when the police come to if the police show up, they're gonna arrest someone that I care about, and you don't know if you're ever going to see them again, or you don't know if they're going to get released, you mm-hmm. don't know if they're going to get processed and charged and thrown in jail, and you might not see them for years, if ever again. Like that was the stuff I had to address when I was working for the police mm-hmm. department, and I was there for almost 6 years. Mm-hmm. So after working with victims of crime with the police kind of led me to working for the state and wanting to help with I wanted to be able to use everything that I had learned about systems, about community, about how barriers impact livability issues, especially in our communities. And we're looking at, like, you know, encampments, unsheltered folks, people who have barriers to housing, people who have barriers to healthy foods, and wanting to help inform policy mm-hmm. and how are the resources getting allocated to our community organizations, and what are and how can we do more with what the state or the county or the city gives us mm-hmm. as far as funding and sources and things like that go. And working most of my career working under a grant, you know, grants are very mm-hmm. prescribed, right? The money is already earmarked. The money is already, like, tells you what you can and cannot do, right? Like what's allowed and what's not. So I was like, so what my thought process was, like, if we can help whoever writes the grants, like whoever designs the RFP, like how the money is going to get doled out and what the money can be used for, mm-hmm. if we can be part of those conversations so that we can change how the grants are written, and then we can, our community organizations can have more autonomy on how the work gets done in our community, more unrestricted. Mm-hmm. And I'm also now co-chair of the MIWRC board, and I've been in this role for about a year and a half. And it's I've learned a lot mm-hmm. about governance mm-hmm. and a lot about how things are run and how to support without without getting too involved. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like because I've always my knee-jerk for, like, if I see a problem, I want to get mm-hmm. right in there and, like, be like, move out of the way. I'll do it. Mm-hmm. Here I come with my cape and my...
Wonder Woman belt.
Wonder Woman belt, yeah. My
crown?
Yeah. Headband? No, I don't know. What was her thing? It was, like, the sword of truth. Just kidding. So that was like, so this being in this role as co-chair is like supporting, offering guidance, mm-hmm. but in a way that I'm not overstepping boundaries.
Yeah, that's such
and putting myself into like hot water.
Right.
I'd get close like enough to the hot water.
To know it's hot.
And then I'm like, okay. I'm gonna go back over here, but then, but I tell people all the time. I was like, if I was like, I don't really know where the what my parameters are. Mm-hmm. So if I'm doing too much, just tell me to back off, mm-hmm. and I'll readjust. But like, I don't know what I don't know until I know something, mm-hmm. you know. So that's been a really interesting learning curve for me, and I. Joined the board because, well, one, my auntie told me to.
Shout out. Big auntie energy.
Yeah. She's like, she practically like signed my name on the thing. She's like, you're doing it. I don't care what you say. And I was like, okay, like, don't hurt me. But then I'm really glad that there were so many times where I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I am like, I should just, who am I kidding, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I can't do this. I don't have enough, I haven't earned it. I don't have enough training. I don't have, mm-hmm. I'm not a director. I've never been a director. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do that. But like, I guess what really motivated me to continue that, continue in the role is to like, say like, I need help when I need help. Mm-hmm. And for Native women, like, that is tough. Mm-hmm. Like, that's been pretty tough for me to be like, I can't. No, yeah. Don't show weakness. Never say die.
You're a goonie. Get it together. I
know. Right.
That's okay. So I feel some of the same things that you do, because I'm on the board of Native American Community Development Institute. And when they're talking about things, and I'm like, and I've been on there for quite a while, so I should be picking up on stuff. But I feel there's that, what is it called? When you're imposter syndrome and you're mm-hmm. like, what am I even doing here? And it's easy for me to say, well, you are part of this community and no one would know better than you. Mm-hmm. I'm quick to say that to you, but like for me, I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing here. So I feel like there's so many, there's over 25 nonprofits in the Native community that there should be some kind of like intensive, I don't know if it's a certification program or some kind of training where we all learn this. Because if there's going to be this many nonprofits and 501c3s here and they need Native board members, mm-hmm. And I know that there's probably reluctance in joining a board because we don't know what to do. And I feel mm-hmm. like that's a need in our community because we have so many and we need Native representation. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, I feel like I'm probably going to be able to have to cycle out soon because I've been on there for so long, but we need somebody to step in. But if it's daunting, then mm-hmm. we need that training or that reassurance or something, because it's real. And it's, and even though I'm friendly with everyone on the board, I still feel like I don't know what I should ask. Like, what question should I ask? Am I going to sound dumb? Or, you know, like, what should I do?
Right. Yeah, you can only read the bylaws so many times before, like, the things I need to know are not in here.
Yeah.
Like, there's, I mean, even, like, the simplicity of, like, running a board meeting where it's like, what language do you use? Like, the Roberts rules? Like, that's still a huge thing for me where I'm like, I have, like, a Roberts rules cheat sheet. I was like, do we vote on this
or
not
vote?
Are we voting? Does this conversation at the end of it, do we need to vote? Because then I'm like, you know, I mean, but when you have a quorum on a board, it's kind of fun to be able to be like, you know, anyone's opposed, motion carries.
This is like on the public access, man.
I know. I was like, I feel like we got a bunch of stuff done.
Yeah, you feel all productive.
Yeah. So even those like nuances of like even just like being present in a meeting has been a huge learning curve for me. Because I feel like I'm too, I have layman's terms.
Yeah.
Where I'm like,
I need a layman.
Yeah.
Layman's my jam.
Right. And especially, I only say this too because like Ruth Buffalo is our CEO and she's been on many boards and has like legislation experience. She's been a legislator before and she's been on a lot of different boards, so that like the running a board meeting is like to me when I look at her, I'm like, oh yeah, like this is second nature to you because you have so much experience doing it. Where I'm like looking across the table, I'm like, what do you say next?
What do we do now?
I know, right?
What do we do now?
I was like, tell me what to say because I don't know what to say. I was like, do we vote? Do we not vote?
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, those little pieces of, like, trying to figure out, like, what to do and what not to do. It's like, I'll get it down and then but that's practice. Actually, my co-chair is Pam Johns and she works at Red Lake College. So I go to visit her on campus down here in Minneapolis. And I'm like, can you see if like there's any students and other staff that like we could like have a mock board and like
I'd practice.
We can practice. We can assign roles and we can create like fictional situations. And like, I was like, you're opposed. You're not opposed. So like we can just practice.
Here's a fake budget.
Yeah.
For us to approve.
Right. You're the treasurer this time, like, and just kind of have like a practice.
They should do that.
Yeah, I would so be down because I'm like, I don't know, because we only have an official board meeting like once a month.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, this isn't enough time for me to be like, I have to remember what we did last month.
Yeah, and then you can barely remember what happened yesterday, right?
I know. Yeah, for sure. It's but it's been a great experience for me, like personally and professionally development. I updated my resume while I was on the board, but that was before. And then now I've updated my resume again and I'm like, I'm putting everything on there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I'm able to like motivate and influence people. Mm-hmm. Like that's one of my skills now.
Yes, for real.
Like even if it's not like completely accurate, I mean, live and let live, I feel like, but I'm also like, I can wield some power a little bit.
I'm going to put works through imposter syndrome on my resume.
Right. I recognize
my own inner triggers. We should write that
right,
stuff.
Right.
That's important.
You should have, like one of your skills is self-awareness.
Empathy.
I know, empathy, especially for self.
I have boundaries.
Right.
Oh my
Maintains
God.
Maintains healthy boundaries. I feel like this would be like a resume, but for like a dating site.
Mm-hmm.
Like these are all my green flags.
Yes. We don't want red flags. Red flags are so 2024.
Right. I feel like I would only include like soft red flags where it's like I hog the popcorn at the movie theater.
They're pink. Or
right.
Put that fake butter on popcorn.
Yeah. Right. Like you got to get your own bag of popcorn at the movie theater. And you got to pay for both of our bags. And then
there's all these Yeah.
Right. I feel like they're very, like, easily mitigated.
For real. They're not deep-seated things.
No. I feel like that's where the trauma healing comes in, is where, like, I'm not going to, like, unload a bunch of, like, trauma I have about being, like, abused by Minneapolis police in the streets, because I've already dealt with that trauma.
At the movies.
I've already addressed some of my trauma, so, like, my triggers aren't so triggering.
Yeah. Yeah, they're softer.
They're softer.
They're not so jagged.
I feel like I'm more rounded.
They're nice and fluffy and gooey. Oh, my God. Well, on that note, we're going to take a short... I was going to say quick and short at the same time, and it just says... We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more to Deanna Bolio about her healing journey, and this is fun. This is great.
This is fun.
Support for KFAI comes from the Parkway Theater, presenting Pure Prairie League Thursday, July 10th.
The country rock band known for its hits like Falling In and Out of Love, Let Me Love You Tonight, and Amy are back with an all-new album, Back on Track.
AmericanaHighways.org calls Back on Track a well-thought-out menu of fine songs and performances that still retain the Pure Prairie League potency and poignancy.
And their album cover mascot, Sad Luke, is back too. For more information about Pure Prairie League at the Parkway Theater, is available at theparkwaytheater.org.
The 19th annual Bayfront Reggae and World Music Festival takes place July 19th from 3 to 11 p.m. at Bayfront Festival Park in Duluth, Minnesota. Headliners include Jamaican reggae and dance hall artists Romaine Virgo, Charlie Black, and Kenyatta Hill, with culture Nigerian Afrobeats artist Timia. Local favorite Woodblind meets Teague Alexi, and DJ Sound of Fusion from Trinidad. Tickets and more info available online at bayfrontworldmusic.com.
And we are back. We're talking to one of my lifelong friends from back in the day. So it's been over 40 years that I've known her. So that's a long time.
By most standards.
It went by so fast. And we were talking about all the crazy stuff that we used to do. And just, I mean, when Dee and I get together, it's crazy, because I remember one time we were at the Indian Center and we're talking. I think we're at the cafe. This is before the pre-renovation. And we just echo, our laughs just echo through the halls, like, ah, ah, ah. And everyone's like, what's going on over there? There's only two of them over there. But that's just the vibe that we're double D over here.
Yeah, D squared.
The D squared. Okay, that's better.
Yeah, I remember, like, where were we at? We were at a Powell or something, and then we were at the casino afterwards, and, like, I was sitting in a booth, and then somebody was sitting next to me. I don't remember who it was. And then you came and sat down, and that's where, like, D squared came from, because, like, we're like, oh, you're, like, in a Deanna sandwich.
Lucky you.
Like, oh, I don't know what you, how you got so lucky in your life that you got to sit in the first ever Deanna sandwich. And it's like you got, like, double D's. They're like D squared. Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Whoever it was, right, let us know.
Right. Whoever's light shone upon you, hey, for you to be in this situation.
And your whole paradigm has shifted now.
Right. You're the only one on the planet that says they've ever been a Deanna sandwich.
But you're not the last, eh?
Right. And plenty more to come.
Stay tuned.
Stay vigilant.
Oh, my God. I hope people get our jokes, because we get our jokes. But for the listeners, they might be confused.
I know. Like, what if these jokes are only funny in a vacuum? That's sad. That upsets me.
Oh, at least it has a HIPAA filter.
There might be, like, yeah, we're the 0.001% of bacteria that get our jokes.
Oh, my God. Okay. For you listeners, so I do apologize, because this is the D squared you're getting. Why do you think it's important for us, and why, by saying us, like, well, me and you, Native women, and the Native community as a whole, to heal our traumas?
I think, well, I think it's extremely important to heal trauma. I think, well, based off of, like, my own experience with my own traumas, you kind of operate from them. I found that, like, there were, I kind of mentioned before, but I think that there are things that are stored as trauma in the brain and in the body, that if you haven't necessarily healed them, you're kind of always, like, thinking from that perspective of that pain or that hurt that you experienced from the trauma. And you're always, like, kind of looking for ways to avoid or prevent something from happening. Like, you're always trying to, like, mitigate risk so that you don't get hurt again. But with there's no risk, there's no reward, right? So I think, like, healing trauma just for someone to be able to explore who they really are and truly meant to be, like, how the Creator put us on this, you know, this Mother Earth, to experience what a human life is like. I think that's one aspect of it. And then healing trauma is releasing yourself from the burden that you would normally mm-hmm. carry without knowing what it is. And that's very scary. It's frightening. Mm-hmm. It's like if it's something that's trauma that you've always used, that is almost like a reliable. It's mm-hmm. reliable because you know it.
Mm-hmm. Familiar.
You see it. You live with it. You carry it around. It's part of you, right? Mm-hmm. And so even though it's something that hurts you or something that you need to heal from and release it and let it go, that fear of uncertainty of, like, who am I mm-hmm. without this trauma, right? And I've been on a personal journey recently of exploring a lot of, like, who am I if not for my experiences, mm-hmm. right? If this is somebody who, if this is the person I'm meant to be, if I hadn't experienced the traumas that I experienced as growing up as a child into young adulthood into mm-hmm. adulthood, and then I don't know if I'm on, like, late onset adulthood.
I totally am.
But I was, I went to a friend's birthday over the weekend, and we were kind of talking about age, and as like women, I was like, I don't feel my age. I don't feel, I mean, I know, like, I mean, I know I've lived a mm-hmm. while, over 4 years, but I don't feel old. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're young, old, like, mm-hmm. I remember when I was, like, 16, my friend had an older sister who was 27. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, your life is over.
Isn't it?
So can you imagine being 27? I feel like, man, that's, like, you're cooked.
So it's all downhill from here.
Right. So thinking about being 43, and I'm like, I'm maybe, like, you know, just now learning who I am
yeah.
as a person, even with the traumas that I experienced, because they have made me who I am.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a long version of your question, yeah. is why it's important to heal trauma, is because it influences how you see the world and yourself right. in it.
Right. And it influences how you treat other people.
Mm-hmm. And yourself.
Yeah, how you see, because if you have so much trauma that you can't even really have a clear idea of even what you want or what you like or what you love or who you are, then that's going to project on other people. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of the times it's not good, or there's, like, a coping mechanism where you are a people pleaser. Mm-hmm. And I did that mm-hmm. for a long time, and I still kind of do it, but I recognize it, and I know that it's for my need to be liked, and I don't mm-hmm. know what it stems from, like, what the root cause of that is. But like you said, I feel, you know, like my body, I feel tired and old and sometimes, but like I'm learning so many new things that mm-hmm. I don't, like my mind doesn't feel like you said, that old. So because I'm still learning things and I feel like that's what keeps you young is like being open to new experiences.
Yeah. And I think getting older has taken the training wheels off a little bit as far as like risk goes.
Yeah.
Because like they're like, if you asked me to do this on your like get in front of a microphone like a month ago, I'd be like, crazy. But now I'm like, you know what? Like all bets, the gloves are off. Like I'm just going to see what happens mm-hmm. because like, you know, I think as a mother and as a, you know, I'm always kind of, you're always trying to like, you know, safeguard, anticipate mm-hmm. things happening and try to prevent like the terrible things happening. But mm-hmm. like, even if you try to prevent terrible things from happening, they still happen. You know, people still die. Mm-hmm. You know, or the loved ones that you have in your life that are precious, you still lose them. You know, mm-hmm. so it's like you can't, there's things that happen to you in life that you can't control. So you might as well, you know, go on the radio show. Like you might as well, you know, do the thing you're afraid of. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's because like my daughter is an adult on paper now. She's 19 and I'm transitioning from being a mother of a mm-hmm. to a child to a mother of an adult. And dealing with a lot of like feelings that are a mixed bag. Like I'm so proud of her. Like I look at her and I'm like, how did I do that? How did I get so lucky? Yeah. How is like this gorgeous creature that ever walked the planet mine, mm-hmm. my baby? Like how? So having that like, but that's also like the pendulum swings, right? So I'm like, I love her so much that like, I want to like, you know, just like absorb her into mm-hmm. into me, so she's with me all the mm-hmm. time, every day, all the time. But then like coming to the understanding that like she has to go and live her own life, and how do you support her and then hate supporting her at the same time? Because I'm like, I love you so much, I want everything good to happen to you and everything that comes with it, like, but I hate that I have to like let you go to an extent so that you can have a life, because mm-hmm. you can't always be my baby girl. And and like it kind of occurred to me that releasing her means releasing myself, mm-hmm. and that's scary for mm-hmm. me, because for the past 20 years I've identified as Olivia's mm-hmm. mom, and this is who I am, this is my core, mm-hmm. and this is and for me that commitment has always meant the same thing, until now I'm like, I can be a little more free to be Deanna again. Mm-hmm. I'm still Olivia's mom, I still love her, I still care about her, I still want everything that's great about this life to happen to her and be her mom. But yet, like, I need to also know what Deanna needs mm-hmm. and focus on my own needs. Mm-hmm. But I think with some of the experiences that I've had is that, you know, the fear that I have of abandonment and the fear that I have of resentment, of being resented or of being abandoned, mm-hmm. me choosing myself and what my needs are over the needs of others feels like I'm abandoning them. Mm-hmm. And that's like really scary to me, because I've always wanted to distinguish myself in that behavior of not, like, I have such a fear of abandonment that I will never do anything that anyone in my life that I care about will ever experience that feeling of abandonment from me. Mm-hmm. So I've always kind of like made my decisions for what my life looks like in that thread. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, kind of uncoupling that to a degree where it's like, I can still be a great mom, but like do what Deanna wants to do. Not you, Deanna. Me, Deanna.
Not me yet.
I mean, we can do what you want to do. Like, I'll come kick it with you. We can hang out and do stuff. Like, we can do what you want to do. But then it's my turn. But, you know, I think when we're talking about healing, like, that's part of my healing is being able to identify what that is that creates that uneasiness within myself, like within my body. Like, cause when sometimes when I think about it, my stomach hurts, like I can feel it. Like it's a queasy, uneasy feeling where it's like, and that's your body's way of telling you there's something here you need to focus on it. Like there's if you have like a visceral reaction to a thought, that's your body's way of saying, hey, pay attention. Kind of like, don't ignore it because ignoring it is only going to hurt you. And I think being older and having the courage, and even being older and like my bills are paid, so I don't have to worry about where the food's going to come from, so that I can actually like pay more attention to my own hierarchy of needs. Right? Like, I wasn't really able to worry so much about myself because I had a little person that completely depended on me for her needs. So I was like, as long as everyone around me's needs is met, I can anticipate needs and I can anticipate what's to come. I can deal with what I need later. As long as everything, as long as they're okay, I'm okay. And now that, like, it feels like it's been flipped. Where I'm like, I'm not okay. What am I going to do? What am I going to do about it? Like, I don't know how to be this girl. I say girl because I'm a lady.
Well, because you were a girl before you were a mom. And it's almost like you're not like you're frozen in that time, but like your independence is back there. And so I think, you know, because Bree is 26 today and... I think the hardest thing in parenting is the letting go part. And because you were so focused on not having control, but just like controlling and having them dependent on you. And I feel like even in my family, there was so much codependency because they couldn't let go. And, you know, with my mom and my grandma, there was so much codependency. And then that letting go piece, it's scary and it's hard. And I mean,
and even when you like, even the word codependent is like, it for me, it like, I get like an anger response from that word. It's like that word for me is like a 4-letter word where I'm like, who are you calling in codependent? Like for me, it's an insult, or it's like so for me, like that word is not helpful in my healing. Like I understand what it is, but I think because of the conditioning and like the association that I have with that sense of like codependency is bad. Codependency means that like you're not your own person. You're not an individual. You don't have the autonomy. Like you can't make your own decisions because you are so codependent on others to that you can't exist on your own. So for me, like, because, you know, I talk to my mom often and we talk and you know, I kind of was like, what was it like for you when I was 19? And I was like, I don't even know if I want to ask that question because I don't think I want to know how I was to my mom when I was her age, when I was my daughter's age. Like, I'm scared to be like, to have to apologize for my behavior then.
Because it was worse. Because
it was, I'm sure it was worse.
It was worse than what we got.
I'm sure, like, I don't know. Because I had bus tokens. I was gone.
You were on the bus line.
I was on the bus line. Like, catch me on the 14. What's up? I'll be at the Mall of America. I'll be at the Mall of America until they cut us off.
Camp Snoopy.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think when we talk about that, like, we are, because we are interdependent mm-hmm. on each other. It's like who we are as people, right? Like our cultural and our customs are defined by that interdependence mm-hmm. on each other. Like I am you and you are me, and yeah. we are it. Like this is what it is, right? Like my existence is, I'm only here because of the people that came before me mm-hmm. and that understanding is like, you know, and when I heal myself, I heal others. I heal everyone around me. But I'm getting to the point where I have to unlearn the feeling of self-healing feels selfish.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm choosing myself over others.
Yes.
And that feels so incongruent. Yes, it's so incongruent to, like, I'm always thinking of others first. Like, that's kind of been my mode.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's, and you know, you can trace it back to, like, being a kid. And I remember when my dad's mom died. And I was 6 years old. And I remember, like, I remember she was sick. And I remember my dad telling me that she passed away and, like, not really understanding what it meant, but knowing that was, like, you're just not going to see her again or anymore. And then we, you know, you go through the burial. And then I remember being up in Nadewash when we buried her. I remember, like, vividly, like, because it was, I remember it was, like, winter. It was cold. So, like, mm-hmm. the grass was brown. There was no, like, the trees were bare. And I remember, my dad telling me to get in the car, we're leaving. And I'm like, hold up. We can't go. We can't leave. Grandma's here. We can't leave her here. Like, for me being a kid, like, I was like, that's mm-hmm. not something I can conceptualize, yeah. like leaving her behind. Right. Even though it was just her body. But for me, I was like, I go where my grandma goes. Like, mm-hmm. this is where we're at. And so, like, some of that, I think, stems from that. Like, how now I'm like, I can't leave anyone mm-hmm. behind. Like, that feels like I'm, like, how do you, it feels like you're, like, cutting off a piece of yourself. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't want to have to cut and bleed so that other people can feel whole, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, there's things that happen to me that now is, like, there's a common thread. And I'm able to, like, if you can identify it, if you can name it, if mm-hmm. you can, if you can, like, almost, like, touch it and understand it, you can release it. And that's kind of where I'm at in my journey now is, like, do I really need this?
Mm-hmm.
Was this trauma or was this belief about myself because of a decision or experience that I had in my own life? Mm-hmm. Or was this placed here by mm-hmm. historical trauma or something that happened a long time ago and we carry that trauma with us through generations? Like, is this mine or was it placed here?
Mm-hmm.
And is it okay for me to let it go? It's almost like mental. What's that lady? The Japanese lady, the joy, spark joy lady.
I have the book.
I know. What's her name? Tidy Life something.
Oh my God. Sorry. I have the book and I see it every day.
But it's almost like, what she would do with, like, items of clothing. Yeah. Like, you give it a hug.
Mary.
Does this spark joy?
Mary.
Does this.
Kojo. Ko.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
You can edit her name in later.
Oh my God.
But it's almost like I'm doing that with my feelings. Is that, like, does this
spark joy?
Right. Or does it spark pain?
When it comes to that stuff, I'm too tired to carry stuff that I don't.
Sometimes we hold on to the pain too because it protects us, right? It protects us from being hurt by others. And we weaponize it so that we don't get hurt again. I know somewhere out in like a parallel universe or out in ether, there's a version of me that is super like systematic with laundry. Like,
girl,
I have all the bins. I fold all the clothes. There's a version of me out there somewhere that is like super, like knows where every single t-shirt I've ever owned is, but I'm not her.
I don't think anybody is that way. That would be kind of weird. There's a version of me in the dimensions that mates her socks.
Oh.
I have a basket of socks. I've washed them twice and they sit there for months. And now that it's summer, since we don't really need socks as much, they just sit there. But I've been, and I even throw a lot away, and I'm like, oh, and so it's so weird. I have such sentimental connection to socks.